It is time. Arthur Schwartz, the food mensch.
I'm right here trying to figure out ways to not cook that kind of weather. I just don't want to do it. But of course, we have to eat. And I have to say, the other day I had this hankering for one of my favorite summer dishes, vitello tonnato. And somebody, I don't even remember who now, suggested that when I said, you know, I really would love to have some vitello tonnato, but I'll explain what that is in a second. But the cost of the veal is astronomical, if I can even get it. I mean, I know I have a good butcher, so I'm sure he'll get me whatever I need and sell me whatever I need, but I don't think I want to pay $60, $70 for a small veal roast. So somebody suggested I make it with a center-cut pork roast, something I don't cook very often because it's a dry piece of meat, but I'm willing to try it. But anyway, I read a whole bunch of vitello tonnato recipes. I haven't made it in years, and I made it in several different ways. And then I decided, you know what? It's too much of a project because not only do you have to poach this big piece of meat, which does create some heat in the kitchen after all, but you have to make the tuna sauce and then slice the meat after it's cooled and then pretty much marinate the meat in this tuna sauce overnight for it to really be at its optimum. So it was all too much. But on the other hand, I do like the tuna sauce a lot. And I thought, well, you can put the tuna sauce on sort of everything. And I dug up a recipe that I made years ago for just the tuna sauce. But, you know, and I went back on the internet to see what I could find. I went into my cookbooks. I know what I was going to find in the books I knew that had it. The size of a tuna can has changed dramatically since almost every recipe I looked at was done. Because nowadays, tuna comes in 5.5-ounce cans. Even what I like, which is light tuna packed in olive oil, 5.5-ounce can. Same price as the 7-ounce cans of yore. So it used to be 7-ounce cans. And almost every recipe you look at, and there's a big calls for 7 ounces. And there's a big difference between 7 ounces and 5.5 ounces when you're only making, you know, a cup or so of tuna sauce. What tuna sauce is basically mayonnaise in which you have pureed tuna, and usually anchovy and capers as well. They don't have to be the fancy capers I buy packed in salt. It could be the supermarket version, which is packed in brine. In fact, I'm sure that most people use that. Maybe you garnish with my fancy big capers. Anyway, the sauce is a mayonnaise, kind of mayonnaise, and so you could use it as a dip. I like it on toast myself, just like a bruschetta. And you do have that element of tuna in it. You can garnish it in various ways, though you don't need to. But here it is. Now, this is all done in a blender. Now, the other thing I had a laugh at is that almost every recipe I looked at was using one of those newfangled super speed, super charged blenders. And I have my old 60-year-old blender, which works very well for a basic blender. I guess you could do this in a mini processor too. Anyway, you just combine everything and whirl it until it's a puree. And the everything is a 7-ounce can of oil-packed tuna, about a half a cup to two-thirds of a cup of plain old mayonnaise out of the jar, a few anchovy fillets. Don't be scared. In the end, you really won't taste anchovy, but I would say anywhere, depending on the anchovy fillets, 3 to 4 or 5 anchovies, fillets, and then a quarter of a cup or so of extra virgin olive oil. You'll decide later if you want the or so part. You need an acid, and I use white wine vinegar, but you can use lemon juice. It's also excellent. In fact, you know, it could be half and half even. You need at least 3 tablespoons of acid, one way or the other. And then the capers, a couple tablespoons of those capers that come packed in brine or vinegar, drained, And I don't know. I like to put in a little bit of hot pepper, but you don't need to. You know, like a pinch of cayenne pepper. Salt and pepper, if you need it. In the end, you'll decide. And whirl that all up until it's a cream. You can add more oil. You can add a little bit of the caper juice if you want, a little bit more acidity. That's a good place to find it. And that's it. And then that gets spread on toast. Now, and you know, for vitello tonnato, it gets spread on poached veal. That's a whole other story, and it's almost always garnished with capers. So when you, it's a real caper thing. So if you are going to just spread it on bread, then you can garnish it with capers, you can garnish it with some little greens, you decide. It also is very good on cold chicken, I have to say. I often roast a whole chicken, butterflied in the oven, spatchcocked, as all today. And we eat the dark meat and the wings for one meal. And then I have all this beautiful breast meat. And if I sliced it up and put it on a platter with tonnato sauce, it would be heaven. But then again, you got to turn on your oven for at least an hour if you want to roast a chicken. So save that maybe for a cool day, but the tonnato is good just on bread, on toast. Doesn't heat the kitchen up too much to make toast. But anyway, this all led me to, what else can I make that I don't have to cook? And, you know, I haven't made gazpacho in years, but I'm really tempted to now. I do remember my first gazpacho experience, and it was in the late 70s. It wasn't my first taste of gazpacho, because I'd had gazpacho even growing up. It was a thing in the 60s. But in the 70s, I went to Spain to Jerez de la Frontera, which is where they make sherry. The word sherry comes from the name of the place, Jerez, in Spanish, J-E-R-E-Z. And it's 24-hour-a-day celebration for the vendemia, the harvest in sherry, with bullfights and flamenco performances. And even in the streets of Jerez, the kids are all dressed up in flamenco attire and doing flamenco in the streets. It's really quite a, I don't know if it's still like that, but that's what a way it was 50 years ago, 47 years ago, whatever it was. In any case, I was invited to a garden party, a midday party. I have to say, almost everybody at this party seemed to be have a hangover, because everybody's been out all night partying, dancing, drinking. And but the garden, it was, I can visualize it. The tables were all upset up in a U, and some of them had food on them. But the main attraction was the making of gazpacho and the eating of gazpacho. And it was such a hot day and in the sun that everybody just stood around and sipped their gazpacho. But this gazpacho was not a puree. It was chunky. What they had was, for, you know, show purposes, but still very good, a huge basket full of the different vegetables that were going to go into it. And next to that, a huge mortar and pestle. And they had a man standing by the mortar and pestle grinding up all these vegetables. And then, and I don't know what made it cold, but it was cold. Maybe they put ice in. It's possible. Although in Europe, they're not big on ice. I don't know what was made it cool, but it was cool. Maybe not cold, but cool. And it was, even though it was made in a mortar and pestle and it was sort of chunky and thick, it was still drinkable. So they didn't even serve it with a spoon. They just served it in cups, and everybody stood around and sipped their gazpacho. I must say, it was obviously memorable, but it was also delicious. And I've always tried to reproduce that, but it's not reproducible. For one thing, you don't have the ingredients that they have in the south of Spain, just like with Italy, you know. I mean, you can make things taste pretty Italian, but still, the produce is not the same. So it's not the same. Anyway, I looked in my book, Soup Suppers, thinking I must have this recipe in this book. But in fact, I have three different gazpacho recipes in Soup Suppers. None of which is really the one that I had in Spain. These days, I mean, not only these days, but ever since then, I've been to Spain quite a few times since then. If you order a gazpacho in a hotel restaurant, in a restaurant, even in a simple place, you're going to end up with a puree of all the vegetables, which is basically tomato, sweet pepper, maybe a little hot pepper as well, cucumber. That's pretty much it. Onion, garlic, all mashed up or pureed. What you get in a rest in Spain is a puree in a bowl with, depending on the place, various garnishes to put in, which would be cubes of dry bread, crouton, could be cubed cucumber, could be some extra fresh tomato, diced up, onion, and people garnish their puree with these chunky vegetables. And you know, it sort of emulates the old-fashioned one that was made in a mortar and pestle. And that's gazpacho. Now, the other gazpacho, so the one that I experienced in Jerez is the Andalusian version of gazpacho. I think the others have become very urbanized. I mean, the puree with the garnishes is some kind of elegant thing. I doubt somehow that in a peasant home in Spain they would be doing that. But anyway, the other gazpacho is a pre-tomato gazpacho. What do I mean? You know, the tomatoes were introduced to Spain, by the way, to Spain before any other country in Europe, by the explorers. People say Columbus. It wasn't Columbus. It was Cortez, whose party brought back tomatoes to Spain and eventually to the rest of Europe. Some places adopted them, like southern Italy, because they grew so well there. And other places just used them, but didn't take over. In any case, before the tomato, a dish that was called gazpacho existed, but it was white because it was made with. But by the way, the word gazpacho, I'm not an etymologist, so I can't give you the whole real etymology of this. But I do know the word gazpacho is related to some Arabic word, which basically means dry bread. And what runs through any recipe for gazpacho, no matter if it's white, red, green, whatever, is the fact that it's thickened with dry bread. So in the case of the white gazpacho, which, by the way, I was introduced to by Paula Walford, a good friend of mine in the late 1970s. Paul, by the way, is still alive, living in the Hudson Valley. Paula was a breakthrough person. She broke through a number of cuisines, but her first book was about Morocco, but the next book was called Mediterranean Cooking, and I cooked a lot from that book. In fact, I think one summer I basically cooked through the book. But one of the chief revelations of that book was white gazpacho, and it's made with almonds, garlic, dry bread, some vinegar, water, olive oil, and garnished with, believe it or not, peeled green grapes. I say peeled because even in my book and Soup Servers, I say, you know, you're going to be tempted to make this not peeling the grapes, but you don't have the full experience unless you actually peel the grapes. And if they're big green grapes, it's not as hard to do as you think. Beulah, peel me a grape. It was an old Mae West movie. I forget which one, but Beulah was the maid. Anyway, so you puree all this in a blender, in a mini food processor. I think it's probably better than the big one, unless you're making a big batch. And then you garnish it. You chill it well. And you make it as thick or as thin as you like. And the way I would start out off with, you know, let's say a cup of bread, and then soak it. And then after it's all done, if you really do want to thicken it up again, you can take, ladle a little bit of your the mixture off and soak some bread in it, or even just soak the bread in water and put it in and puree it. It's very good and very refreshing on a hot day. And there it is in the refrigerator. You just have to pour it out, put a few grapes on top. That's my story. Anyway, let's see. So what else am I going to do? Ah, so here's one of my go-tos in hot weather. I know I have to boil water for this, but still. I make egg noodles with cottage cheese. If you can get pot cheese, it's even better. What's pot cheese? Pot cheese is a large curd, basically large curd cottage cheese. So I do use large curd cottage cheese. There are several brands that I like. Axelrod is my favorite brand, but I'm having a lot of trouble finding Axelrod. I don't know what happened to Axelrod. Daisy is another good. They make a very good, creamy, large curd cottage cheese. So for every person, I don't know, we don't eat a lot of noodles at one time, so no more than 3 ounces per person. And I have to say, I do go out of my way to buy these noodles. They're kosher egg noodles. The brand is Kaimak, a very common brand. The noodles are called Hamisha, which means homey, and indeed, they taste homey. They taste like homemade noodles, eggy and not too thin, and not slick like most egg noodles are. And also, I noticed that almost every egg noodle you buy these days is curly, whereas the Kaimak still makes a flat, broad egg noodle. So we don't eat more than 3 ounces per person. And so for 3 ounces per person, what I do is I cut up some butter, at least 2 tablespoons of butter. I mean, if we're indulgent, a little bit more. I cut up the butter and put it in a bowl. And when the noodles have cooked to the desired tenderness, drain them and put them in the bowl with the butter. The butter will instantly melt. Toss, toss, toss with some salt and pepper. And then at the end, put in, I would say, a good rounded cup of cottage cheese, which will cool down the noodles. This is not going to be a hot, hot dish. In fact, it's very good at room temperature, but we eat it when it's still warm. And you just toss the noodles in butter, salt, pepper, and cottage cheese. That's it. The other easy, almost no cook, I mean, you have to cook pasta, a dish that I make is with Asian style. I make a peanut butter sauce with starting off with about a quarter of a cup of peanut butter. Smooth. I like smooth peanut butter, so that's what I keep in the house. But if you like chunky, works just as well. Of course, it'll end up with bits of nut in it. A heaping quarter of a cup of peanut butter, and then blend in a couple tablespoons of vinegar. I use rice wine vinegar because it's going to be Asian, and I always have that around. And then some hot sauce, depends on what you have around, and some soy sauce. I would say at least 2 tablespoons of soy sauce, a clove or two, depending on your taste, of garlic and the size of the clove of garlic. And for this, I do grate it in on the microplane, because I don't want to feel any garlic in the sauce in the end. If you have ginger, I know some people keep ginger in the freezer just in case, you can grate some ginger into that too. If you don't have fresh ginger, it wouldn't hurt to put in 1/2 teaspoon of powdered ginger. I'm my grandmother's grandson. My grandmother cooked with a lot of powdered ginger, so I still keep powdered ginger around. And that's it. Peanut butter, vinegar, white vinegar, rice vinegar, white wine vinegar, any apple cider vinegar, soy sauce, garlic, ginger. You won't need salt, but you will need pepper. And so, as I said, either some kind of Asian hot sauce or just some cayenne pepper or a few shots of Tabasco, that kind of hot sauce. But, you know, spice it up to your taste. Blend it all together. If it's too thick, You can add maybe a little bit more vinegar before you add a little water just to thin it out a little bit. And then that goes on, I put it on spaghetti. Make your spaghetti to your own taste, drain the spaghetti, and then in this case, rinse it with cold water. You don't have to chill it, but you do need to rinse it off with cold water, drain it well again, and then toss it with your peanut butter sauce. Oh, I know, I forgot. In the peanut butter sauce, I usually put a few shots, as much as a half teaspoon or so, of sesame oil, which gives it a nice sesame edge to the peanut butter sauce. I have to say, we have a number of Chinese restaurants that we order in from, and none of them really makes this as well as I can in 5 minutes. So I've stopped ordering it, and I just make it myself. Another one of those things I do on a day where I really don't want to eat much. And by the way, that's the spaghetti with peanut butter / sesame sauce is very good with some vegetables like a julienne cucumber, or thin strips of sweet pepper, red, green, yellow, any color you like. Maybe some scallions cut up that could go on nice. And that's about all you need. Maybe you want to put this to bulk it up. I have done this before. I make a bed of lettuce and put this on top. And, of course, the peanut butter is a very good dressing for the lettuce as well. In fact, one of the things I like to do every once in a while is instead of making my usual oil, vinegar, salt, pepper, maybe a oregano dressing, I make tahini, which is sesame. It's basically peanut butter from sesame seeds. But that's delicious with lemon juice, garlic, and then a little water to thin it out. That's about all you really need. So in this hot weather, noodles to the rescue. I've yet to go the ramen route, but I am very much tempted to buy some ramen and try cooking ramen, because the ramen reconstitutes much faster than does spaghetti. So that means less heat. By the way, I was just thinking about this morning as I was making coffee. We boil our water in an electric water kettle. The real reason was, when we got it, was because just putting one burner on underneath a pot of water for coffee or tea heated up the kitchen too much. So we thought the electric kettle would do the job, which it does. But as a side benefit, it's lasted long enough that now the issue is, did you remember to turn it off? So we're very happy to have the automatic turn-off electric water kettle, so we don't have to worry about that old age problem. All right, I think that's going to be it for me today. It's too hot even to talk.
Thank you very much. This has been Arthur Schwartz, the Food Mensch, on Robin Hood Radio.